Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
What are germs? Germs are tiny, tiny little creatures that want to kill you. The human body is made out of many yucky parts, and it's important to keep germs away from all of them. Germs are everywhere, on the inside of windows, on pencils, on apples, in the U.S. mail, between your piggies, and especially on dirty, filthy cowboys. Bicycles are another breeding ground for germs. Never, ever touch a bicycle with your bare hands. And dogs are full of germs, too, so never let a dog eat your hair. Germs can enter the body in a number of ways. Whenever you get a railroad spike impaled through your head, germs have easy access to your brain. Even a tiny cut or scrape can be deadly. As soon as you're injured, immediately cover the open wound with crazy glue to keep the germs from getting in. And make sure you wash your hands 30 or 40 times a day. Or else a giant talking bar of soap will appear in your bedroom one night, and no one will ever hear from you again. Always burn your clothes immediately after wearing them. Whenever possible, have your dinner prepared inside a hyperbaric chamber. Rinse your mouth with hydrochloric acid after every meal. And if all else fails, run. Run for your lives before the germs get you, too.
Funny because it's true. It's 27 minutes after the hour of one, and this, the month of March of the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for drawing near, making a part of your listening day. Thank you for gathering around the wireless, that ye might be entertained, informed, amused, and that your life might be just a little bit better than it was before you discovered the glory that is this, the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy.
It's crazy.
It is. It's a slap-happy, rib-tickling laugh-fest. It's a giggle riot. What's going on over there?
I was attempting to roll my chair, and there was some sort of a cable or something in the way, and the little wheel wouldn't go over it. So it was like I was playing bumper cars with my chair and unable to come all the way up to the table to join in the mirthy merriment with you.
Okay. Wasn't caused by more yogurt on your face, was it?
No, it was just me having more problems with wires.
Damn it. You know, I didn't even get a chance to... Nah, sons of bitches. I didn't even get a chance to put out a Twitter thing about this because I was so distracted by this Daniel Baldwin song. There's a whole lot of things that don't make any sense this morning. But one of them is that I was sent by Cheryl this morning. I think you got this, too. I think she actually just said, let's see, what was the caption that accompanied this?
We were actually copied on the original of this.
Really?
Oh, yes. We're on his mailing list.
Let's see. What have I...
I saw this early this morning in my email.
I don't think I'm on Daniel Baldwin's mailing list.
No, this is Richie Bristol's mailing list.
And, I don't think I'm on Richie Bristol's mailing list.
No, I checked. It went to you, too. You just apparently didn't see it yet.
Maybe it's one of those things... It's entirely possible that Richie Bristol is one of those names I have flagged as a sort of, you know, an indicator that mail should be sent right to some sort of permanent deletion file. I got this from Cheryl. It just says, let's see. Cheryl opens her email by saying, "Sweet Jesus, this made by morning, winning." Boy, doesn't it seem like a Charlie Sheen, Daniel Baldwin thing, like a crossover is imminent?
Oh, yeah.
Like some sort of a buddy cop show where they're just snorting blow and banging whores and solving crimes like every night or committing them. Or committing crimes and pinning them on other people.
They could be like two bad lieutenants together.
But it wouldn't be the bad lieutenant. It'd be sort of like the kooky lieutenant. Yeah. You know, it'd be sort of the zany lieutenant. So I gotta hold on. I'm gonna start this again. I'm just gonna start this whole day over here. Just hold on. Everybody, look over there. Okay. That is the second time. Why, hello, it is 31 minutes after the hour of 1, and this the month of March of the year of our Lord, 2011, from high atop the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964 if you would like to join us today and be part of the program, telephonically speaking. Or, you know, whatever. Or don't. Or just sit there and stare. Just sit there and mope. Just sit there and become a participant instead of a become an observer instead of a participant. What is it James Woods says in that movie?
I don't know.
Damn it, there's that whole speech he does in that movie True Believer. Nah, I got nothing. Trying to come right out of the gate twice. First time I get distracted by Daniel Baldwin. Second time I come out of the opening there, the opening little riff, and I'm trying to do a James Woods thing, and then it just I can't even bring the woods. I got nothing.
You don't got woods?
This is what I get for trying to bring a James Wood quote from like 1987 from a movie I believe that just starred. Is it James Woods and Kevin Bacon, or am I thinking of Murder in the First?
Can't remember who was in True Believer.
Or is True Believer the movie with James Spader? Oh, man. I don't even know what's going on in my head anymore. This is probably what early onset Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or something feels like.
That's okay. I'm completely distracted because you know how you and I are both sort of kind of obsessed with the Freakonomics guys. And they did that one thing about food where they went to that like crazy place in Seattle where
the guy's the 3D printer.
And then the guy who's doing the six volume, like $600
Nathan Myhrvold
thing about food. And on Boing Boing today, they have a page from his book where he basically cut a wok in half.
Yeah.
And it's this whole thing where they're showing you how
the heat
actually works.
Yeah.
And it's just awesome. It's just like the most amazing thing ever.
That really is that Nathan Myhrvold guy who is profiled extensively in the second Freakonomics book, Super Freakonomics, where he talks about Super Freakonomics, which is actually in some ways a better book than the original Freakonomics, but which is something I almost can't recommend because it just ends up being exceptionally angering. It's one of those where I'm not saying that those guys are necessarily right about everything, but they do present a pretty compelling argument when they want to. And they talk to Nathan Myhrvold, I'll say this, that the second Freakonomics book, which again is just called Super Freakonomics, there's a subtitle, but I can't really remember it. I'm not going to say that it's completely accurate or that it's definitive or that it's without fault because I'm not really smart enough to know. But I will say the Freakonomics guys have written in that book what I believe to be, it is, I think, the most even-handed, level-headed discussion of and treatment of the subject of global warming that I have ever, or climate change, or whatever you want to call it, in my life. I think it is the only time I feel like I have ever read anything about climate change and not just gotten some talking points from one side of the aisle or the other. You know, from conservatives who say that it's just impossible that we can do anything ever, you know, to impact the environment in any way. And then, in fact, coal is good for you, and you should feed it to your children at birth, and you should douse them daily in some sort of petrochemical substance because it's a good emollient for the skin. You know, or liberals who would have us believe that we're all going to be dead by the time 4 o'clock rolls around. So
don't use plastic bags, kids.
Exactly, because that'll stop the problem. That'll cure everything. Just switch to paper, I guess. Except that paper comes from trees, which I think we need. So it's all very confusing. But they go to that Nathan Myhrvold guy, who of course is working at that Intellectual Ventures, which is his company in Seattle. And it's like that moment in the podcast where the guy's talking about, well, last year I did this thing where I tried to cure cancer, and that didn't work out so well, but I'm going to try again this year. And at Intellectual Ventures, they had this thing where they're trying to stop global warming, and Nathan Myhrvold demonstrates this process that he believes they've come up with to stop global warming for literally, it works out to like 4 cents a person or something. I mean, it's, you know, it's like $100 million, like, but like total, forever. It's like a one-time payment of $100 million. He's like, yeah, we can stop the entire thing. We could reverse it. It'd be 10 years. It'd be like it never happened. And so they just say, well, why, you know, are you going to do it? And he's like, well, no, probably not. We need somebody to help us out, and nobody's really offering. And then he just goes on to show them the thing that zaps malaria-ridden mosquitoes out of the air with a laser beam. So he's just got, like this Ark of the Covenant place, but it's a laboratory.
Yeah.
Where he just shows, like, one amazing, unbelievable, like, mind-blowing invention after another. And he says, well, so here's the thing we developed that, like, you know, I don't know, removes tumors, you know, by playing the kazoo. And they go, well, that's great. Is that going to be available in hospitals? No, nobody's interested. Next, you know, and then he moves on. Like, they talk about the global warming thing. And again, I'm not a scientist, but they do lay out a pretty compelling argument that this thing they came up with is, it is the closest I have ever heard anybody come to describing something that is a rational discussion of global warming and then a possible solution to it, you know, if it does indeed pose a problem. And again, they talk about how it could all be done for like a one-time fee of like $100 million, and you know, and it'd be done, and you would be able to adjust it so that if it ever recurred in the future, you would be able to stem it once again. And they proposed it to Al Gore, and Al Gore's like, "Ah, that's crazy." And then just his response literally was, "That's crazy." And then he just, that was like the end of the interview. That's all he would say about it.
Nice.
So you kind of put the book down and just kind of going, ah, I wish I hadn't read that, because now I'm just, what the Freakonomics guys do is they, on the one hand, they make you feel better about things because you realize that there are a handful of really, really smart people in this world who just, and I'm not even saying that I'm one of them, but people who really understand what's going on, and they have, you know, they have the facility and the faculty and the motivation and the desire to understand things and to process information fully. But then simultaneously, but it's like they're handing you that with one hand, and with the other hand, they're just taking away any hope they gave you by pointing out that that is not 99.999% of the people on Earth. Because most of the people with whom we share the planet are deeply, deeply stupid in like an irrevocable, unchangeable, non-fixable, incurable way. So there you go. There's your up for today.
Yay!
Why were we just talking about that just now? Oh, you were talking about the thing of cutting a walk in half because he's got that 600-page cookbook out.
Yeah.
But back on the true believer thing. So
No. It's like a 2,500-page cookbook. It's 6 volumes.
Oh, that's right.
And it's like $600 or something.
But less about science, more about James Spader. So
okay.
I believe that, so Murder in the First is, I think, Kevin Bacon, Christian Slater, maybe James Woods.
Okay.
But then I think True Believer is James Woods and James Spader. But I could be wrong about that altogether.
Wasn't there one with Robert Downey Jr. that had a similar
name?
That's
True Colors. That's True Colors. No, no, no.
Okay.
That's True Colors. That is James Spader and Robert Downey Jr.'s political operatives in Washington, D.C.
True Believer was James Woods and Robert Downey Jr.
Well, then what?
1989.
Well, then what was James Spader in? James Spader was in True Colors with Robert Downey Jr.
Okay.
Just a waste of time and energy right there. That's a waste of science. That's a waste of...
Woods movies with the word true in them, getting them straight.
That wouldn't even make a good Jeopardy category. All right. This is... I'm gonna find a way to pin this on Daniel Baldwin. All right. Well, in any event, it is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. If you'd like to in-way with us on anything, it's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com. You can also email Don Taylor if you like. It's Don at don@rickemerson.com. Text box on the website open in just in mere moments. You can also message us via Skype if you like. It is Rick Emerson Show. That is our username. It's all one word. Rick Emerson Show at Skype. That is how you message us via Skype. It is Rick Emerson Show. Yes?
I have all these things going on in my head right now. Like,
just go ahead.
Okay, first of all, did we decide that Juggalos are clowns?
I don't think... Well, I didn't decide anything one way or the other because I don't recall that was an issue.
Okay. Well, because we were making that... We had that whole thing where we did some Insane Clown Posse stories as clown watches. And I was saying I didn't believe they were really clowns.
I don't think they're traditional clowns, no.
Because I have a Juggalo story for later and I didn't know if we should do it as a clown watch.
I would say no.
We should have a Juggalo watch.
No, I would say that they...
Specifically for Juggalo stories.
I would say that they're not. I would say that they're not really a clown any more than Bob Keeshan was a kangaroo. I think just sort of you know,
yeah.
I just having some of the attributes of or being dressed in a manner similar to does not make you the thing. That's just that'd be my take on it.
Item the two is we got an email from listener Robin saying your idea yesterday about a super heroine that had certain special powers with her brustuses. She believes that on Attack of the Show last week they did kind of the same thing, and if you Google Bustus, as in the word justice, only with a B, you'll come up right away. And then go ahead.
Isn't Bustus the name of those weird tiger things that, what's his name, that Ozymandias had in Watchmen? No, that was Bubastus.
Oh, yeah, Bubastus.
Never mind.
And item the third, yesterday you were going to say the names of our new subscribers,
yeah,
and you didn't do it.
It's funny that you mentioned that right now because I was just about to. I was about to say howdy and hello and a big Rick Emerson greeting to, let's see, we'll just go through these one at a time, to new listener Vic, who joins us. Hello, Vic.
Hi, Vic.
Listening in Hoffman Estates, Illinois. Greetings and salutations. Hoffman Estates, Illinois.
I don't think I've ever heard of that. We're huge in Hoffman Estates.
I'm going to say it doesn't even sound. It sounds like Vic may just own the entire place. Like it may just he may just be sitting on the front lawn with a mint julep in his hand and you know, and just taking in his palatial estate
with a giant bronze statue of Dustin Hoffman.
Exactly, or just of himself. So hello, Vic. Hello, Vic of Hoffman Estates, Illinois. Let's see, who else are we welcoming? We're welcoming listener Aaron. Listener Aaron listening in Portland, Oregon. Also, just as of literally like about 10 minutes ago, new subscriber Adam in... We were all over the place this week in Hope Mills, North Carolina.
Nice.
The hell is Hope Mills, North Carolina?
It sounds very, very...
I mean, it sounds like a place you want to be.
Pleasant, doesn't it?
He lives... I mean,
it sounds very white picket fencey.
I guess I'm not giving out his last name or anything. I won't give out his actual address, but I will say that he lives on Labrador Drive.
Ooh.
So he lives on Labrador in Hope, in case you want to go burgle him. Because you know he's got at least 32 cents. So there you go. So that Labrador Drive. He lives in Hope Mills, North Carolina. So hello to Adam. Hello to Vic. And hello also to listener Aaron. And so now we've got Aaron in the OC, as he always does, weighing in all caps, screaming about the fact that we're somehow diluting down the pool of Aarons and the value attached to his name by adding more Aarons to the pile. Mm. So, you know, sorry about this.
We do. We are fairly heavy with the Aarons.
Take it up with parents,
but, you know.
Sir. Keelan would like to note that Hoffman Estates is just code for no black people here. That's his assessment of the situation. I'm sure it's a fine and inclusive place. I'm sure that it's a big tent at Hoffman's Estate.
Oh, yeah.
Where everybody, people are welcome regardless of race, creed, color, religion. You know, whatever. In any event, it's 503-505-6964. What a flying start today's program has gotten off to. You can also email if you like. You can also text if you like. Or you can just scream a lot at the speakers and hope that it'll come through. It's not really going to work, but if it makes you feel better, you know, have at it. Whatever. Let's see. Coming up today, we got your Cheney Watch. Cheney Watch also, we'll talk about last night's episode of House, which is really going to be a twofer. We'll talk about last night's episode of House. And then we will talk about last week's episode of House, neither of which I really care about all that much, so it's going to be pretty easy. It's like I could talk about the entire season. It would take me the same length of time just to go, meh. So we'll talk about last night's episode of House. We'll talk about the fact that you are caught up on Breaking Bad now, all three seasons. We'll have another installment of the greatest songs ever made that is coming your way in about 25 minutes or so. Another installment of the greatest songs ever made. And so forth. Plus, Don Taylor is tracking the following stories for you on this Tuesday.
Well, I got your Juggalo news. I've got your Daniel Baldwin news. I have a story about Christian pole dancing. And if you're very, very lucky, I'll tell you about Swedish Easter.
Okay. Since you said we have Daniel Baldwin news, I might as well just go to this right here, because this is the thing that actually distracted me earlier in the show. When we came out of the opening there, and I did this sort of, you know, rap at the phone number and the email address, and then I was immediately just sort of thrown by looking at this video that accompanies. I don't even know how to. I'm just gonna. Sometimes, like when they fire you, they say there's no easy way to say this, so I'm just gonna say it. There's no easy way to say this, so I'm just gonna say it. Daniel Baldwin makes hip-hop debut, says the headline here in this email. Daniel Baldwin, and they have to... Here's the sad thing about the email that I got from Cheryl.
The press release that we got from Richie Bristol, by the way.
See, I didn't get it. I'm looking through right here. I got nothing. I don't know where it
went.
Do
you want to see it? It's right here.
No, I got it in front of me. The best part is how in the subject line of the email, they actually identify him as, quote, Baldwin brother Daniel Baldwin. So far from the public zeitgeist and consciousness has he slid that they must now quantify his Baldwinness by noting that he is in fact related to the others. Baldwin brother Daniel Baldwin makes hip-hop debut. March 21st, 2011. Daniel Baldwin makes hip-hop debut. Film and television star. Daniel, speaking of diluting down the pool, Daniel Baldwin moves into music. Dateline Portland, Oregon. After, I suppose this really is worthy of, hold on a second. Dateline Portland, Oregon. After conquering the small screen. Really? All right. After conquering the small screen, Daniel Baldwin hopes to conquer your speakers with. I'm just reading this, I swear to God. With the release of his.
It was written by Richie Bristol.
See, that's the thing. Hopes to conquer your speakers with the release of the first. Of his first hip-hop track, the single Club Life, marks Baldwin's foray into the music scene and is part of the official soundtrack of Stripperland, a feature film due on DVD in April. Here's the money line. This is going to be either the worst or best moment of your day. I don't care who you are. I don't care who you are. White, black, gay, straight, Jew, Gentile, Christian or heathen. this is either going to be the apex or the trough of your day, possibly both at once. Quote, hold on, I really got to refire this just so I can... I always wanted to be a rapper, Baldwin said.
Well, you know, he's already conquered film and television.
What else is left for him except to go to the moon, or perhaps to cure some dread disease? Baldwin co-wrote the song with Northwest hip-hop legend Pale Soul.
He's a hip-hop legend, is he?
I guess. Pale Soul also provided the backing track. The song was an integral part of Stripperland. Intrigued by the motion... I'm not making any of this up, by the way. Intrigued by the motion picture's script, Baldwin became enamored with the character of... Double D. A rapper who was... I'm so sorry about all of this. It was able to keep stripper zombies at bay with his music, and one imagines just people. Baldwin embraced his rap persona. During a video shoot for the song on Sovie Island outside of Portland. Now, is it Sovie Island or Sovie's Island? It says Sovie's possessive here, but I think that's wrong.
Yeah, some people do say that, and I believe it is actually Sovie Island.
I don't think that's right.
But some people do say Sovie's Island.
The Stripperland soundtrack is available at Best Buy.
No, you skipped a part.
I didn't.
You skipped the part where you said...
I didn't skip it.
No, you got to read that.
I eschewed it.
You got to read it.
Oh, God, you read it.
Baldwin endured long hours in a tracksuit and skull cap despite 104-degree temperatures. During the shoot, part of which is featured in Stripperland, let's not forget, Baldwin cast aspersions at Joaquin Phoenix, another actor turned rapper. But then this doesn't go any further and say what... It just basically is saying, oh yeah, while we were shooting this thing, he talked smack about Joaquin Phoenix.
And wore a skull cap. The Stripperland soundtrack...
Which you know you want to rush right out and get right now.
It's available at Best Buy, Barnes & Noble, Borders, iTunes, and StripperlandTheMovie.com. About Baldwin, it says at the bottom. Along with brothers Alex, Steven, and William, the 49-year-old comprises the most star-studded family in Hollywood history.
There's so much wrong with that sentence, I don't even know where to start.
So much wrong, and also... And every definition of the word wrong comes into play here.
Yeah.
Daniel Baldwin has starred in more than 60 films and television shows. He has also been featured in several reality television programs. And then at the bottom, if you've ever seen a press release, it says like who the contact info is or who you follow up with for more information. Contact Richie Bristol, executive producer, Stripperland Motion Picture Soundtrack. And then his phone number and email address.
And his company, don't forget the name of his company, Cheesy Flicks.
And that's, let's be clear, that's not Richie Bristol's company.
Oh, no. Those are the producers of Stripperland.
That is a Cheesy Flicks. Now, Cheesy Flicks is actually not a bad company. They are a company that, as I understand it, they started out by reissuing movies that were no longer available on DVD or like and cult films and B-movies. They actually put out the DVD, the special edition DVD for Convoy, starring Kris Kristofferson, directed by...
Oh, crap.
Fail.
I used to know that. I don't remember.
Sam Peckinpah. Yeah.
Damn.
So...
I'm my brain is full of Stripperland. So.
This is a thing we want to read. I'm not going to say that I read the Daniel... And by the way, we haven't even played the song yet. I'm not going to say that we read the Daniel Baldwin story just so this would happen. But I knew this would happen. I knew that this would be a result of reading the Daniel Baldwin press release just now. Our friend and I don't mean this in an Eddie Haskell kind of way. Our friend and talented and accomplished musician, Keelan, alias The Low, for many longtime listeners of the Rick Emerson Radio program, a hip-hop enthusiast and performer in his own right, types, and he never does this, types in all, screams in all caps, rails at life via the text box, saying in all caps, "Are you effing kidding me?" After all the man hours, thousands of dollars, shows, CDs, pain, suffering, this effer has a press release. And then he just types, "F you, life, I quit. I quit at life."
Oh, Keelan. Oh.
And I think this is just with the power of Daniel Baldwin's words off the page being transmitted by me through the speakers. We haven't even played the man's music yet.
There is a power. There is an amazing power to being a Baldwin.
Wow.
So are we going to listen to a little of this song, are we?
Yes. Oh, by the way, Aaron in the OC is now Jesus in the OC, apparently.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be one of those days.
It's like a Thursday, only different.
Everybody's gone a little bit crazy, and it's only 1:51. So there you go. So coming up later on, we'll have your Cheney Watch House recap from last night. We'll do another installment of the greatest songs ever made. We'll have a little bit of a guest announcement for this very fine radio program. Do you know the guest announcement?
No, I don't think I do.
Okay, well, we'll have a guest announcement. It's, I'll tell you during the break. We'll have a guest announcement coming up here just a while.
I think you told me, and it's gone now somewhere.
Okay. Before we do anything else, before we get to any news, anything, we really would be remiss if we didn't play a little bit of this. So this is Daniel Baldwin's, his entree, his foray, his introduction. Introducing Daniel Baldwin as a hip-hopper. Double D from the Stripperland soundtrack, available again for anybody out there, available at Best Buy, iTunes, available all of, probably at Amazon, also at StripperlandTheMovie.com, probably out of the trunk of his car.
Stripperland, of course, being a movie about stripper zombies. And is that the one that, is Gilbert Gottfried in that as
probably.
Well? I believe he was the big name that they got for that movie.
Well, Ron Jeremy's in it too, Don.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the thing, and don't get me wrong, it's not like I find fault with a movie about stripper zombies. I mean, there's nothing wrong, there's nothing in that sentence that I had that I take issue with. You know, it does seem like a very, and I mean this sincerely, it seems like a very Portland movie. I hope it's good. We got mad love for Richie Bristol, as they say.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just... It really is the Baldwin aspect here that that's really what is causing so much mystification. All right, we'll just go ahead and play a little bit of this. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I give you, just in case everybody's...
Rapper.
I just want to make sure everybody's ready and prepared.
I'm ready. I'm
ready. Everybody settled? Okay, here we go.
Open my visa in preparation.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you rapper Daniel Baldwin.
I'm here to kill. When it is all over, someone please just read their will. Double D, the WFC. Stash your cash, cause all the issues free. Bitch, get down on one knee. So gaze up at my scepter to confirm that it is me. They got the numbers, but I got the licks. When this concert is all over, they'll be lighting their blitz. Like an addict, creepy needing her fix. We'll slay these stupid skeezers with our grapey coffee. Well, you know.
Club life. It's like I spend all my time in the club, baby.
There appears to be a lot of different things going on at once in this song, and none of them really go together.
No.
There's a lot of disparate elements that I think are not meshing as they ideally should.
And yet, I'll admit, I've heard worse.
Well,
the disconcerting part about it is that his voice sounds so much like his brother Alec.
Yeah.
And so it's like Alec Baldwin is rapping, which is just...
It's like the Joe Esteves of the Baldwin family.
So my money's gone.
Keelan reiterates, F my life, 6 days a week, twice on Sunday. My parents are lucky I don't own a firearm. I would have ended myself moments ago. And no, Don, you have not heard worse, he says.
That's in time. So put away your rodents and the f***ing dime. On the charts, we will always climb. A platinum off record.
I don't think he's rapping so much as he's just reciting. Is he? Isn't he?
I think...
I mean, there is a line.
You can't hide that fear.
Who is he talking to in this song? Is he talking to strippers or zombies or zombie strippers or to us, the audience?
I don't even know what the song is about. Is he sort I just hear words, but they're not making any sense to me.
Is he kind of the Greek chorus of Stripperland? Sort of appears to tell us what has happened thus far in our performance.
Someone wants to spend money on someone. That's all I'm getting out of this.
I thought he wanted to take money, or perhaps to make money. Money. We can weary of every hoe that have to taste the one on your lips. It will fade away just as soon as I zips. It used to work in. After a taste of one of your lips.
And it will fade away as soon as I zips. I think he's just saying words so they rhyme, but he doesn't care if they make sense.
MC Spoon June.
I kind of like the screaming in the background, though. I think more rap songs should have people just randomly screaming.
It's the sound of the producer trying to find something sharp enough to sever his carotid artery. There's no other, not a single other guy. I think somebody's vacuuming in the studio.
Because you know that I am gone. Remember me, the king, yo, someone's laughing.
The Uncola Man makes an appearance. Was wrong. At least that when I jet, you will always have the song. When he jets, is he talking about he dies? That we'll have the song, we'll have this to remember him by? And what club is he at?
I know. Oh.
What the hell was that?
It was a plane crash.
Are these zombies we're supposed to be...
I'm not watching the video, so I don't know. Is it like just is he just standing around on Soviet Island with zombies around him?
I'm actually just listening to the audio track now. The last time I watched the video, he was standing outside a bus, like a tour bus, in some loose fitting dungarees.
Oh, okay.
Sort of gesticulating. You know what I was thinking? We should. You know, I made a mistake. I should have had Keelan in the studio. I should have had him listen to this live for the first time to get his raw, sort of unfiltered take on this. Hearing it, he says that's not a sound effect. That is my career screaming in the background, Rick. Okay. As we flow, and you watch me go. Remember that I'm entered under Curtis Blow. Check the wave. Oh God! Oh my God!
Curtis Blow.
Oh wow! Weary of every hoe
that have to taste. Was that him just like throwing in the name of any black man that he could think of?
Wow!
Like Sidney Poitier.
Nothing rhymes with Sherman Helmsley, so you know. Nothing rhymes with George Washington Carver, unfortunately, so he had to go Curtis Blow. He mentored under Curtis Blow. Look, here's the thing. Rick Emerson is white and lame. And white and lame. But I have to say that right now, because the black community isn't in the studio with us, it's just Don and I.
And we are both very, very white.
I am going to take it upon myself to be offended on behalf of the black community for that line. Just, you know, just like until they hear this and they're able to sort of take that burden back on themselves, I'm going to carry that cross. I will carry the mentored under Curtis Blow offense on my shoulders like a yoke. Until the appropriate factions in the world hear the song and decide to do what needs to be done. Oh, my God. Austin, the Winnebago, bitches. Oh, I wish I was dead. All right, there you go. There's, ladies and gentlemen, rapper Daniel Baldwin.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, women in the Houston, Texas area are pole dancing once a month for Jesus. Dance moves once reserved for strip clubs are being embraced by devout church-going women. In the quaint turn-of-the-century community called Old Town Spring, where Victorian-style shops line the streets, one business stands out, Pole Fitness for Jesus. There's no preaching, just teaching.
Okay.
Set to Christian music, church-going women learn to pole dance.
How is it for Jesus, exactly?
I guess because they're doing it to Christian music. Instructor Crystal Dean said, God gives us these bodies, and they are supposed to be our temples, and we are supposed to take care of them, and that's what we're doing. So I feel spiritual connection whenever you have the music on, and it's singing about lifting you up and being closer to God. You do feel this. She said getting the classes off the ground hasn't been easy. She said, some guy came up with his Bible, and we were in class, and he thumped on the door and was waving his Bible. People who want to sit there and judge it, you know, like, well, that is sacrilegious, or, you know, That doesn't make you a good Christian when you judge other people.
That's right. Judgment is mine, saith the Lord.
So a 19-year-old named Eric Pergeson said that in God's eyes, pole dancing just is not attractive. His family runs Lord and Nature, a Christian gift shop neighboring the Christian pole dance
class. What is the name of the lead polette there, or whatever her name is?
Crystal Dean.
I'm going to look up. What do you suppose Crystal Dean looks like? Suppose she's attractive?
I'm sure she is. She teaches pole dancing
Crystal
classes.
She's, yes. Yeah, because all the
and
women.
Her name is Crystal.
That's always a roadmap to hotness.
And Texas has a lot of very good-looking women, particularly in the Houston area.
Pole dancing. Jesus.
So,
I'm going to have a song. There should be like a Kinky Friedman song called Pole Dancing Jesus.
Yeah.
Ooh, Pole Dancing Jesus is going to be my new exclamation of surprise or shock.
Pole Dancing Jesus?
Sweet Pole Dancing Jesus! wait, hold on a second. I think I've actually found a picture of of Crystal. Pole dance is the headline pole dancing is one of the many ways to worship Jesus?
No, mine says Christian pole dancing class creating controversy.
All right, so. Let's see. I think I've got a photograph of Crystal Dean here. Let's see if I can.
I think the actual place that does this is called Best Shape of Your Life. The Pole Fitness for Jesus classes are held the second Sunday of each month. For ladies who take in their church pamphlets, the classes are free.
The class is free. Yeah, she doesn't charge because she doesn't want to make a profit on the Lord's Day.
Right.
I'm trying to see if there's any sort of comments here. They're not. They're doing that thing that KGW does where it's like they just got the file footage of like some pole dancer somewhere.
Wow.
So probably not Crystal Dean. The thing about it is there really is no middle ground when it comes to really Christian chicks. They're either just butt faced or they're really really hot. There doesn't ever appear to be any sort of there's no stop off point between destination one and destination two. Oh wait, I think we've got some audio from Crystal Dean. Hold on a second, let me see if I can get this.
When you see breaking news, get out your smartphone or camera and be an eyewitness. See it, shoot it, send it to news@abc13.com. We post it for the world to
see it.
Suffer through
the eyewitness revolution.
All right.
But here in Houston, women are pole dancing once a month for Jesus. Yes, you heard that right. The dance moves once reserved for strip clubs are being embraced by devout, church-going women. Eyewitness News reporter Sonia Zod takes a closer look.
Sonia Zod, what a badass name that is.
Oh, yeah.
In this quaint turn-of-the-century
twirl before Zod
community called Old Town Spring, where Victorian-style shops line the streets, one business stands out.
Pole Fitness for Jesus.
Yes, Pole Fitness for Jesus.
Oh, hello.
There's no preaching, just teaching.
So hook low, and then
could this be Crystal
Dean,
temptress of my heart?
Music, church-going women spin and slither around poles.
Okay, I stand corrected. They spin and slither.
They spin and slither around the poles.
I stand corrected. The women shown in what I thought was just sort of a file photo. They are, in fact, women who are taking this class. So one of them is heavily tattooed, and you know what that means.
Well, yeah.
So I'm hoping that this woman in the... Are you looking at this story?
Yes.
There's this woman in the orange top and the blue shorts. I'm hoping that's Crystal Dean because she's... I approve. Rick Emerson approves of her, her aesthetic appeal.
The instructor and students say it's not about sex.
This is my second class.
For them, this is about getting closer to God.
God gives us these bodies, and they're supposed to be our temples, and we're supposed to take care of them.
Ooh, wow.
And that's
okay.
What we're doing.
I give Crystal Dean a big thumbs up.
Okay.
I am, she's not like a Hollywood 10, but I mean.
Let me tell you, Houston, Texas is known for its good-looking women.
Yeah.
It is a hotbed, if you will, of attractive ladies.
She has a lot of makeup on. I will say there's a lot of makeup on, and she's got a substantial forehead, but I'm willing to overlook that. Jesus was able to forgive, sinners and embrace lepers. And so I can overlook
a big forehead.
I can get past the fact that she's got like 4.5 up there. So it's.
And that's what we're doing.
Tiffany Booth was raised in church.
Tiffany and Crystal. All we need is a Brandy or a Jasmine to round out the. It's like, I wonder if they had to take sort of. If this is like being confirmed or you're given your stripper name when you start, pole dancing for Jesus.
Bambi McCluskey is on her sixth class.
Okay, of the three chicks in the story. Okay, first of all, I'm looking at this now. First of all, there's Crystal Dean, again, of whom I am a big fan. I am the treasurer of her fan club.
Yeah.
The two remaining chicks I don't know. One of them is, what we say, there's Crystal and there's Tiffany?
Brandy?
No, Tiffany.
No, Tiffany.
Tiffany. I don't know which one of these chicks is Tiffany. But the two remaining chicks, one of them, okay, one of them it looks like this chick that I dated this many, many years ago, who, or what I imagine she would sort of look like now. Do you have that thing in your head where it's like somebody you were with like however many years ago and you sort of do that thing of like they do with abducted kids on the news?
Oh, yeah, you're trying to calculate just how they would have aged.
You're doing like a Photoshop filter in your head of like... like 20 years to see like exactly, she would look exactly like this redheaded chick. But two of these three girls are, they're heavily inked, which, so maybe this is a more, maybe it's this is a more liberal church. Maybe it's a congregation that is more elastic than traditional churches. Where's this, Dallas?
Houston.
Houston.
Now the pole is her temple.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh. Oh, that's the best thing I've ever heard. I gotta back that up. I gotta. Let me just give one more time.
For that's them, that's awesome. This is about getting closer to God.
God gives us these bodies, and they're supposed to be our temples, and we're supposed to take care of them, and that's what we're doing.
Tiffany Booth was raised in church. Now the pole is her temple.
I do feel a spiritual connection whenever you have the music on, and it's singing about lifting you up and being closer.
She's not only been lifted up, she's been lifted up and separated, and Rick Emerson approves of that, too.
Closer to God. You do feel that.
Getting classes off the ground hasn't been easy for instructor Crystal Dean.
Some guy came up with his Bible, and
Crystal Dean is very attractive.
Crystal Dean is a looker. I'm a fan of her, and this is like her... sort of, I mean, I know she's got a lot of makeup on and everything, but I mean, her hair's pulled back. She's kind of sweaty a little bit. You know, she's been doing, she's been, you know, experiencing God as she understands him. And yet, she's legitimately pretty. You know, maybe not, you know, again, like you get her in a good light, you know, maybe it's not the same story. But I mean, from here, she looks okay.
He thumped on the door and was like waving his Bible at people who want to, you know, sit there and judge it. Well, that's sacrilegious.
She has all her teeth.
That doesn't really make you a good Christian when you judge other people.
There are those who just can't get past the stigma.
You know, in God's eyes, it wouldn't be attractive.
He's unfortunate.
Oh my God, his name is Pergeson.
Yeah.
What a great name for the guy in this story.
Old Eric Pergeson's family runs Lord and Nature, a Christian gift shop neighboring the pole dancers.
But we have to watch those boundaries that we cross over and not allow.
Oh my God. Okay, so have you gotten to I got to post this. I'm going to post this right now. I'm going to post this link so everybody can be looking at this. Have you seen her name is Dee Bavadi? Bavadi?
Dee Bavadi.
Okay. What's Kenny Powers' girlfriend's name? April?
Yeah.
Okay. That actress who plays April, she is who would play this less attractive woman in the movie of her life. So Dee Bavadi would be portrayed in the film of her own existence by the woman who plays April on Eastbound and Down. All right, hold on. I got to get this posted at rickemersonshow.com. So, all right.
Wow, she's Dee Bavadi.
Boy, she looks unpleasant.
Oh my God. And she's got the big puffed up bump on the top of her head, Christian hair too.
Yeah, no, she's got like the snooky puff thing going on, and then she's got that like that weird cleft chin.
And just one of those pinched unhappy faces.
She looks like what's his name? Ted Haggard. The bisexual meth guy. God, imagine that there's some man that has to put his member in that. Good God Almighty. All right.
The enemy to take it in another direction.
We found women
what
who
direction
said the classes
is that?
Clear their moral compass.
If someone wants to swing on a pole on Sundays, then that's
would you like to swing on a pole?
Pole is my temple now.
Are you doing it in front of men? Are you doing it as a, you know, sex in exchange for money, you know?
Oh, my God. This woman who's skeptical of the classes, her name is Allison Hannigan. This story just continues to blow my mind. This unpleasant, sexless-looking woman who's opposed. Are you doing it in front of men who seems to be very against the whole thing? Her name is Allison Hannigan. This is the weirdest story I've ever read in my life.
What are you doing?
That's one of those weird out-of-context quotes, though, that news people do, because they say some people seem skeptical, and they come to her in the middle of basically, it sounds like saying,
pole dancing for Jesus. What do you think?
Well, just saying, I don't really know what it is you're talking about. So is it this? And they just cut that out and said, you know, and used it as a soundbite.
I am, by the way, let's see.
Are they shooting people with guns? Are they firing ping pong balls out of their nether regions? Because that would be awkward. Yes.
But for these women, there's room for both the Bible and a little body roll in this town that touts its old-fashioned ways.
They're, you know, going to church and then they're worshiping God. It was just a way for them to continue that. So we're taking care of ourselves. It doesn't mean we're bad people. You know, we're good people.
Best Shape of Your Life holds Pole Fitness for Jesus classes on the second Sunday of each month for ladies who take in their church pamphlets. The classes are free. The instructor's reason? She doesn't want to make a profit on God's day. Sonia Azad, 13.
Sonia Azad.
Okay, so if you want to see this, you can go to rickemersonshow.com. That is now posted at rickemersonshow.com. .com. That is today's blog entry. It's just called Pole Dancing for Jesus, the visual aid. You can get yourself an eyeful of Crystal Dean, who, again, I'm a big fan of hers. All three of these women are sort of attractive in their own way, and not in a sort of, you know, like, I love you all equally, but
no,
in different ways.
Women.
Yeah, they are. So I heartily endorse this. All right. You know, sadly, there are no comments yet. How is it possible there are zero comments? Normally, can I just tell you one of the greatest inventions in the last, like, 6 months? A thing that you didn't used to see, but now somebody has finally decided to start doing this, where they've just made viewing the comments on any news page optional. Like, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, all of those sites, it's like, you go there and you read some article in the Times, and it's like, do you ever do this where you're reading a news article? And even as you're reading the article, you're preemptively, like, becoming angry and dreading the comments at the bottom. And I will actually sometimes hold my hand up to the screen as I'm finishing the article so that I don't inadvertently read any of the moron, the moronicity that plagues the lower third of the page. Just like when I'm getting to the final page of a book, and so I hold my hand up so I don't have to see that, you know, like Rosebud is a slut or whatever. But they've started doing this thing now where it's like you have to click to see the comment. You click here to view comments or to post a comment, which is great. Because most of the time I don't want to see any of those. But this, I really honestly want to see the comments aplenty for this. So, by the way, points also, if you go to the link that I posted, points to the little graphic they put up at the top, which is basically like a mud flap woman sort of spinning around a pole. Like, that's the graphic that accompanies this. That's fantastic. We should try to get Crystal Dean on the program.
Yeah.
See if she'd like to. Maybe she's dreamed about the exciting world of broadcasting, but just hadn't had anybody to show her the ropes. Maybe she needs somebody to show her the way.
A mentor, if you will.
That's right. Yes.
Because, you know, you're traveling all over the country.
That's right.
You know, doing.
It's going to be a lonely
doing
road.
The Lord's work.
That's ministering, Don. It's going to be it's a lonely road out there on the book circuit.
And you need to keep in shape.
That's right. You know, and it's sometimes one's spirits and energy can flag.
Mm-hmm.
One needs something to put a little spring in one's step. I mean, that's if you're not going to improve your life through the glory of Alec Baldwin.
A platinum pick off record.
Daniel Baldwin.
What did I say?
Alec Baldwin.
Alec Baldwin. See, even I'm doing it. That's Alec Baldwin.
Oh. I can't sing along with it because I don't even know what he's saying half the time.
The weird thing is how he does sound more like Alec Baldwin in the beginning, but then later on, it's like somebody must have noticed that they were like, somebody started being worried about a cease and desist or something. If you listen to the first stanza here.
I'm here to kill. When it is all over, someone please just read that will. Double D, the WFC, stash your cash, because all the issues free.
And I think sort of later on, maybe it's just that as we go on, I just my ears adjust to it somehow. Because early on in the composition, it sounded much more similar to Alec Baldwin. But maybe it's
the phrase "fare thee well" is not used in rap enough. I think
no, it's really not.
That in references to Curtis Blow.
Okay, I have to turn this off. All right, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Daniel Baldwin. All right. Have we done any actual stories, or was that the first?
That was the first story, okay. the pole dancing for Jesus.
Somebody asked, I hadn't even really thought about this, but somebody observes that Daniel Baldwin has taken Timmy Ryan's spot in the Pimp Squad. Did you get to experience the glory that was the Pimp Squad?
No.
Really?
Not really.
Do you know what we're talking about?
God, you know, I was in the general vicinity during that, but I don't really remember it.
So the Pimp Squad was Timmy Ryan. Timmy Ryan, Adam Thompson, Richie Bristol, and I think you knew or maybe at least met all those guys. But there's Richie Bristol, Timmy Ryan. You've never met Timmy Ryan, though.
I have never met Timmy Ryan.
And yet he's back in Portland. So Timmy Ryan, Adam Thompson, who is a friend of ours works in L.A., who actually now works for Cheesy Flicks as well.
Oh.
Richie Bristol. And then here's the thing, and he may try to deny it now, but Greg Nibbler, actually.
Really?
I think he was... I may be wrong about this, so I don't want to be saying this is wrong, but I do believe that he was, and I think he sort of realized early on that it was perhaps not for him, but I do believe that Greg Nibbler was for a short time a member of the Pimp Squad.
And what did this Pimp Squad do exactly?
They brought Mad Love to the ladies.
Oh.
They represented. I think they also checked the fools who misunderstood.
Uh-huh.
A little bit of that. The thing about it, like Greg being in the Pimp Squad is sort of like how Mark Wahlberg was in New Kids on the Block, you know, like before they had a record and before anybody really knew who they were. And then he left, you know, either at the right or wrong time. But he's the Pete Best of the Pimp Squad, really.
So was this therefore another group of just sort of middle class white boys pretending to be street?
Yeah, I think I have. Hold on, let me see. I may in fact have, just because Keelan's pain isn't quite, his hell isn't complete yet. Let me see if I can. Find this. Hold on, pimp. How sad that I'm doing a search for Pimp Squad on my computer and it'll probably come up with something. Pimp Squad. All right. It's at a certain point I just had to minimize. I'll bring it back up in just a second. I just had to minimize the text box, the Skype box at one point, because just like Keelan's textual wails of agony were just sapping my will to live. Pimp Squad. All right, let's see what I've got here. Pimp Squad. Oh, here we go. So here's the goddamn. I can't believe I'm about to do this. And on the heels of Daniel Baldwin. Okay, so this is – so the Pimp Squad was, again, Timmy Ryan, Adam Thompson, Greg Nibbler for a time, mm-hmm. and Richie Bristol. I think Richie was the leader, but I could be wrong about that. I think that if you asked – here's the thing. I think if you asked Timmy Ryan, he would say that he was the leader. I think if you asked Richie, he would say that he was the leader. And I think Adam – I think Adam just found the whole thing sort of bemusing, was just sort of lurking.
Is this like a whole – like sort of a boy band, except – all of them are Seth Green from Can't Hardly Wait?
Yes, yes, exactly. Okay. Also, I think we've said this before, so Crystal Cash, who was the overnight woman on KUFO and then became sort of the quasi-music director, and who actually was had quite a good singing voice, was sadly, I don't know if they like, if they roofied her or I don't know what, I don't know what they did. I don't know how it is that they convinced her to do this. But I swear to God, I won't play the entire thing because it's just I just got to play just a little bit of this. Oh, God, Keelan said the Pimp Squad tried to recruit me. Let's see. So, oh, God, I didn't even see this. So Keelan then says Richie, he types in all caps, Daniel Baldwin, and Richie wouldn't get back to my ass about getting on the soundtrack for Stripperland. Well, he was, you know, obviously, he
well,
knew where the
Daniel Baldwin. I mean, come on,
how many streams of gold do you need? I mean, it's you can't have two A-listers on the same soundtrack. All right, so let's just.
It's like having Cheap Trick open for Kiss. Someone's going to end up getting their feelings hurt.
It's like having two Eddie Van Halens in a group. It just doesn't work. All right, so I just. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's the Pimp Squad!
Yeah, boy! Straight out of P-Town!
A-Train, T-Dog, and Money Shot represent.
It's the Pimp Squad!
Yeah. There's a full minute to your life. All your shorties are gonna wanna get back.
By the way, in case you ever wonder what happened at CBS Radio when we weren't like at night or something, or just... What happens to those $500,000 radio facilities when people aren't around doing broadcasting? Or, you know, at slack moments on the weekend when... Maybe a microphone is unattended for long enough. This is what...
It's the Pimp Squad!
A three-headed pimp monster about to get up on the microphone.
It's the Pimp Squad!
Admit it, this is the worst moment of your life.
This is bad.
Your life has never been...
This is terrible.
Even in the depths of despair, even at your lowest moment, you've never experienced anything quite like this.
This makes all of last week. It just pulls it all into perspective, frankly.
I'm Richie B, and I like to swing. I know maybe that's not your thing.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'll take you everywhere I can. Just remember, I'm a big Asian man.
Okay, I can't listen anymore.
Okay. Oh, It's hard because, you know, the thing is, the very first time I ever met Richie, he was wearing a ship captain's hat.
Yeah.
And like 5-inch platform heels.
And saying hero.
Yeah, saying hero. And so and because that was what he looked like the first time I saw him, the first time I met him and was in an elevator with him, that's burned into my mind now, that's Richie.
Yeah.
That's just him. So anytime I hear anything about Richie or see, he's just wearing, you know, wearing his transvestite platform shoes and a sailor's hat.
Okay.
Oh, God.
All right. Hey, you know, Greg and Sarah, they may have already done this morning. Did they tape this morning? They did,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Was this morning when they interviewed Emo Phillips?
I don't know.
Emo Phillips is going to be on their show.
Oh.
And which is sort of astounding. Sarah was sort of kind of passingly familiar with him. She knew he was a comic, but it was sort of before her time. And I was trying to convey, because I think he still does this. I don't know why I just thought about this. Because he still does the same thing, right? Doesn't he still do the same, you know? And then so anyway, I woke up this morning.
I don't know.
I think he must still do the same character.
Guess.
Anyway, so either this morning, if it didn't happen this morning, it's going to happen, I think, maybe this afternoon, that Emo Phillips will be. And I know you stuck around for what's his name? For Michael Ian Black. I might actually stick around for Emo Phillips, just out of curiosity, really, more than anything else, just to sort of see if he still is, like, if he's still doing that, like, that thing. So I don't know why I suddenly got from the Pimp Squad to Emo Phillips.
I don't either.
All right, I have nothing. All right, well, in any event. Well, we should just take a break.
Okay.
Because
we've done so much.
Well, what?
So far.
How could we possibly? I mean, what? How could I possibly segue?
Christian pole dancing and Pimp Squad.
I mean, there's what can I do that's a follow-up to, you know?
Lower juicy watermelon, some perfume Macy's selling. What's that scent I'm wearing? Oh, that's pimp you be smelling. Because when the
I mean, it's really I. If you've got a watch or something to cleanse the aural palate over there.
I do have a Cheney watch.
Oh, well, let's do that then.
Okay.
Awesome. Here's your Cheney watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Every time I see you looking my way, baby, baby, can't you hear my heartbeat? Baby, baby, can't you hear my heartbeat?
Here is your Cheney Watch for Tuesday.
Former Vice President Dick Cheney is getting the HBO miniseries treatment in a project penned by The West Wing writer Rick Cleveland. After previously announcing they would begin work on the original television movies surrounding the 2008 run for the presidency, particularly Sarah Palin with Game Change, HBO has announced it will also begin production of a miniseries based on the political life of Dick Cheney. HBO, in conjunction with executive producer Paula Weinstein, will base the series on both the book Angler, The Cheney Vice Presidency, from Pulitzer Prize-winning author Barton Gellman, and The Dark Side, a documentary which aired on the PBS news program Frontline. The Dark Side gives an in-depth look at Cheney's long political career, from his role in the Nixon administration to becoming White House Chief of Staff under President Ford, to his time with the U.S. House of Representatives from Wyoming, Secretary of Defense for President George H.W. Bush, and finally his two terms as Vice President under George W. Bush. And while a title like The Dark Side seems to reference the oft-used jab of referring to Cheney as Darth Vader, the phrase actually came from Cheney himself on NBC's Meet the Press, describing what it would take to fight terrorism.
Well, you know, and the thing about it is, it's like he's one of those guys, and I guess it shouldn't be surprising, but he's one of those guys not unlike Donald Rumsfeld or Bush 41, where just you look back at the photographs, you know, of the 20th century, and it's like every third picture of any president in office anywhere, it's like Cheney is lurking in the background somewhere, like Zelig. Just sort of, I think what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to go in there and just bomb everybody into small, you know, and he's just sort of like, he's just sort of a horrible, like, house elf kind of lurking there, just whispering just terrible, evil advice into the ear of whoever happened to be in the Oval Office at that point.
And then just going home and counting his giant stacks of money.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably why he never made like a serious bid for president, because you can only be president twice. I mean, you get the two terms. If you're Dick Cheney, I mean, if you don't get elected to be president, you can just sort of float around on the periphery like forever. I mean, you can just sort of create chaos like for 50 years.
Well, yeah, and then be on the board of things like Halliburton and be whispering, you know, military advice in the actual president's ear. That's real power.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and but also being, because you're vice president, and a lot of people don't take the vice presidency seriously, and it certainly doesn't have this sort of spotlight. And so you're also not subject to the kind of scrutiny that you'd be subject to if you were the president. So really, it is the best of all possible worlds.
Well, Rick Cleveland, who did write The West Wing with Aaron Sorkin, he's going to be writing it. And then the project's producers described the miniseries as focusing heavily on Cheney's, quote, single-minded pursuit of enhanced power for the presidency that was unprecedented in the nation's history.
Okay.
So, Cheney.
Okay, there we go. I think we've cleansed away the pimp.
I think so.
All right, there you go. There's your Cheney watch.
Nothing washes away a little pimp like Cheney.
Every time I see you looking my way, baby, baby, can't you hear my heartbeat? Baby, baby, can't you hear my heartbeat? Baby, baby.
Okay. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You can also message us via Skype if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show. That's how you do it. That is Rick Emerson Show. Coming up later on, so we'll talk about the fact that you are getting caught up on Breaking Bad, or you are caught up on Breaking Bad. Talk a little bit about the Shameless, last night's House, and so forth. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Stay there. We return momentarily. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Hold it now!
Judge said, put me in.
time. Here we go again. All right, come on. Get down. Hold it. Come on. Oh, wait a minute now.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
She came from Greece, she had a thirst for knowledge. She studied sculpture at St. Martin's College. That's where I caught her eye. She told me that her dad was loaded. She said, I want to live like common people. I want to do whatever common people do. Want to sleep with common people. I want to sleep with common people like you. Or what else could I do? I said, oh, I'll see what I can do. I took her to a supermarket. I don't know why, but I just started somewhere. So it started there. I said, pretend you got no money. And she just laughed and said, oh, you're so funny. I said, yeah. I can't see anyone else smiling. Are you sure? You wanna live like common people? You wanna see what? Wanna sleep with common people. You wanna sleep with common people like me. But she didn't understand. And she just smiled and held my hand. I went to the flat barber shop. I cut your hair and get a job. I smoked some facts and played some pool. Pretend you never went to school. Such a laugh. Yeah. And the chip stays in Greece. Oh, come out in the bath. We will never understand how it feels to live your life with no meaning or control. And with nowhere left to go. You are amazed that they exist. And they burn so bright whilst you can only wonder why. Or rent a flat to burn. Cut your hair and get a job. I smoke some fags and play some pool. Pretend.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Coming up, we'll talk about last night's episode of House. We'll also have... What the hell else? We did the Chaney Watch, right?
Yeah.
We gotta scratch that off. Hold on a second.
Yeah, get rid of that.
This is all true. Yeah, the Rick Emerson Radio Program brought to you today and every day by fine business partners such as Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to SquiresElectric.com. SquiresElectric.com or call 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Mr. Joe Squires of Squires Electric will be in the studio with us tomorrow to talk a little bit about the nuclear reactors and what happens when they go bang. He spent a long time on the nuclear submarines, and he's talked about going through those drills where it basically was a landlocked submarine, and they would just put you through this sort of Maruian confluence of circumstances and events to just test every conceivable outcome and possibility for what could go wrong with a nuclear submarine. And so as a result, he has a lot of knowledge about that stuff. We're going to have him in the studio tomorrow to talk about what they might be facing in Japan as they deal with nuclear meltdown and the breaching and the leaking, the whatever. So that's going to be tomorrow. Joe Squires is going to be in the studio with us. Today and every day, you can find them at SquiresElectric.com or call 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. Squires Electric. At the news desk, it's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, I have exciting Juggalo news.
Is it really? Hold on a second. It's exciting Juggalo news for everyone.
Saturday, March 26th will mark the inaugural internet pay-per-view offering from Juggalo Championship Wrestling.
How is it possible that they haven't done that already?
I don't know. They've never done it before, though. For the first time in the history of Juggalo Championship Wrestling, fans around the world will be able to experience the insane live action that audiences around the North American continent have come to expect.
Is there a serial
killer? I'm reading this directly from the press release about Juggalo Championship Wrestling, by the way.
It seems like there ought to be a serial called Juggalos.
Yeah.
Everybody, just get on that.
Okay. It'll only be $3.99 in advance or $4.99 the day of the show. And you can enjoy this live event, it says in the press release, from the relative safety of your own home.
Awesome. Well, they must just do it as an in-person. I don't know if it tours, like if it's like the WWE or whatever, where it goes, where they take it on the road and they do the same matches in every city, or if they just have like one giant... You know, it's like you got to come to Detroit or you got to come to, you know, wherever it is that they're doing this.
Yeah, I don't know. This is going to be at what they call a historic and iconic venue, The Rave, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It's going to be a live broadcast. 8 cameras will be catching the action. The young senior official, Kevin Gill.
You don't really think of Milwaukee, Wisconsin as being one of your Juggalo hotbeds.
No, not really. But the main event will be a barbed wire and broken glass match for the JCW Championship. Between the champion Corporal Robinson versus Richie Boy Briar Wellington. There will also be a match between Vampiro and Raven. And a tag team title match with the Haters versus Madman Pondo and the Necro Butcher.
Don't you think Necro Butcher represents?
Necro Butcher. If you saw the movie The Wrestler, you know who the Necro Butcher is.
And so Necro Butcher was also, I believe, some years ago was in a wrestling league called the ECW, which is an East Coast league, Extreme Championship Wrestling, which I think was then purchased by purchased by Vince McMahon or possibly by Ted Turner, and then I think eventually just shuttered. But the ECW, which was huge in places like Philadelphia, and you could get the pay-per-views in Salt Lake, and I did, my roommates and the ECW was awesome because they would have like the full-on barbed wire, broken glass. I mean, just like guys bringing in like car doors and like, you know, and just like tire irons, and I mean, it was...
Yeah, and this isn't like, you know, the fake folding chair being thrown at the guy or something. This is actual barbed wire and broken
glass.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the thing about extreme wrestling is it's like it's a weird... I mean, and I do consider it, a sport, just like I consider professional wrestling a sport. I mean, just because the outcome is predetermined doesn't mean it's not a sport, in my opinion. But anyway, the thing about extreme wrestling is it's like it is somewhere between your regular professional wrestling, like your Hulk Hogan wrestling, and your Ultimate Fighting, in which it's an actual competition and the outcome is not known. I mean, unless it's rigged or something. The Extreme Championship Wrestling, for example, and I would imagine the Juggalo Wrestling League or whatever it's called.
Juggalo Championship Wrestling.
Juggalo Championship Wrestling is where, the outcome is probably, you know, where they go into the ring and the outcome is sort of known, but it's like however they get there is sort of, you know, the wrestlers kind of work it out among themselves. And it's like, well, as long as 29 minutes from now, this guy ends up winning one way or the other, like you guys could figure it out among yourselves, like how you want to do it. And they, you know, wrestlers all have their sort of specialties, and some guys, the specialty is like the barbed wire or the broken glass or being, some guys are like, I could be, there's this guy in the ECW, I forget his name, but it's like his whole thing was he could be hit in the face with like a brick, like 17 times or something, and it would like wouldn't faze him. Like he just developed some tolerance for it. There was a guy named Terry Funk, who is a wrestler that, Terry Funk might actually be dead at this point. I have no idea. But he was a guy who just like his, you know, he was one of those guys that could just, he would go into a ring and he would come out. And I mean, he was just like drenched in his own blood from head to toe. And clearly not, you know, it's not like there's fake blood happening anywhere there. And where you would just see them like wrapping this guy in barbed wire. And then I remember sitting in my friend Kurt's house and just sitting on the sofa and we're watching this ECW pay-per-view match. And seeing them wrap this guy in barbed wire, I don't even know where they got a sofa, but they wrapped him in barbed wire, and then they somehow contrived to carry a sofa into the ring and then just throw the sofa down on him like a couch. So he's all just like wrapped up like, well, here I am wrapped up in barbed wire. And then they like dropped a couch on him, and then they all jumped on the couch, you know, and it was like anyway, I have no point, except to say that if you've never seen that, it really is, it's quite a spectacle. It's something to behold.
Well, there's also a list of many of the other wrestlers who will be competing that day, and it's quite the wide range of names. We have fellows named Bull Payne, Jailbird Man, Too Tough Tony. Then there's like just one guy who's just named Eugene.
Okay.
His wrestling name is Eugene.
But it's also, not like U, no, like hyphen, no. J-E-E-N or
no,
something?
Just Eugene.
Just Eugene. Okay.
Also another one named Jimmy Jacobs. But then wrestling fellows named Baby Bitch Boy, Rob the Submissionary Conway, Rhino, Sabu, Road Dog. This is my favorite. The Man of 1,000 Gimmicks.
Okay.
Congo Kong. The Weed Man.
You think if he was the Man of 1,000 Gimmicks, one of those could be having a better name.
Yeah.
At some point, wrestling names and Wu-Tang names have become indistinguishable from one another.
Anyway, yes. And then when the event is over, there will also be music with the entire Psychopathic Records family taking the stage with performances by Insane Clown Posse, Twisted, Blaze, Ya Dead Homie.
Uh-huh.
ABK, Boondocks, and Dayton Family. So, anyway, yes. Yeah, so, Juggalo Championship Wrestling on Saturday, March 26th. You can find that at InsaneClownPosse.com or JuggaloWrestling.com.
I am just fascinated by the Insane Clown Posse, as you know. I mean, I really, they just, and not in a sort of ironic way. I mean, it's not like I'm a huge fan or something, but they really do. I find the whole thing very compelling. Oh, wait, hold on. We've got a little bit of... Yeah. A little bit of retarded breaking news here.
Oh, good. We've had more breaking news today than usual.
Another injury has rocked the Spider-Man Broadway musical.
No!
Is it the curse of the Spider-Woman, says this article. TV Carpio stepped in to replace another actress injured in Broadway's troubled Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. She herself has now been sidelined after an accident. Producers of the $65 million musical said that Carpio was hurt during an onstage battle scene. She plays an evil spider woman called Arachne. Ne. Ne. Arachne. A-R-A-C-H-N-E. Arachne.
By the way, a character that does not exist in the Spider-Man universe that was made up by Julie Taymor.
Yeah, I...
Who is no longer with the production.
She's spending more time with her family. She'll be out of the show for the next 2 weeks. Scarpia was elevated from a smaller role when her predecessor, Natalie Mendoza, pulled out. She suffered a concussion in December when her head was hit off stage.
Dear God.
Show was the most expensive in Broadway history, being reworked after director Julie Taymor was fired. Its opening has been delayed. Several actors have been injured. Oh, I never told the story, but so when I went to see Book of Mormon, the musical, last Tuesday, which was awesome. So afterward, none of the audio ended up really being usable because there's so much goddamn street noise in New York. I mean, it's just like... It's unless you really have like a shotgun mic or something, it's impossible to get decent audio from interviewing. Like man on the street interviews in New York are insanely difficult to make work. But I interviewed a bunch of people outside of the Book of Mormon show, just kind of asking what they thought and getting their read on it. But several of them had also been to see Spider-Man in because that actually is not even open yet. That's still in previews. But there's this whole group of, just Broadway enthusiasts that just go to see things when they are still in previews. And and I asked several people who had seen the Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark musical. I said, so what do you think? And they just, to a person, I mean, it's like they – and it wasn't like they were just piling on. It was like they just – I would just say, hey, so have you seen Spider-Man by chance? And they would just go – and they would just kind of do this sort of like – and it was like they just – it was like suddenly all of the opinions just sort of like – welled up and vomited out of them. It was like they had so much to say about it. It was like some sort of a repressed memory that all came boiling out in some like long session in the shrink's office. The one guy that I talked to that had the most to say about it said that he was a huge Julie Taymor fan, and I didn't really know that they existed.
She's made a couple of movies and Lion King.
I thought she just did The Lion King, though. What else did she do? I mean, she's done other plays, or is she like mainly a movie director?
God damn, she did that movie with Anthony Hopkins, based on the Shakespeare play, I believe. I can't remember what it's called at the moment.
Well, a thing.
Anyway, but she's done a couple of things.
But he was a big fan of her, and he said, if you're a fan of hers, it doesn't matter. He said, if you're a fan of musicals, it doesn't matter. If you're a fan of Broadway, he said, if you're a fan of U2. It doesn't matter. And I said, well, what if you're a fan of, what if you're a fan of Spider-Man or the Spider-Man. And he actually he did confess. He said that he's not much of a comic fan. He said, I'm not much of a Spider-Man fan. But he said like that there's no actual like the Spider-Man as we know him is not even really present in this. I mean, it's not even really it bears no resemblance to the sort of mainstream, pop culture. Is Spider-Man as he has been developed by Marvel Comics Love these many years. So he said that there was absolutely – and I said, well, what about just seeing it like as a goof because it's terrible? And he said – he actually made me feel a lot better about this. He said that if you just go to see it because it's bad, you will regret it about the 9-minute mark because that's when you realize you've got 55 more minutes, then a 20-minute intermission, and then another hour and 15 minutes before you're done and you've paid like $100 to see it.
Yeah.
So, and that's before like your service charge, your $20 glass of wine, your whatever. So jeez. He just said that there was just nothing at all to recommend. So I chose correctly. I am glad that I did not go to see that.
Good
at all.
For you, Rick Emerson.
That's right.
Congratulations.
All right, so there you go. So once again, in case you're you just missed this. Across the Universe she did.
Oh, Across the Universe. And then the movie was Titus. Hopkins based on Titus Andronicus.
So there you go. That's another Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark injury. All right.
They get somebody texting, The Tempest. I didn't know she did a... Oh, yeah, she also directed Frida. That Frida Kahlo movie with...
The what's-his-name, Ed Norton thing?
Yeah.
You know... Well, that's interesting,
well,
though.
Selma Hayek thing.
Because, well, but see, Ed Norton, there's that whole... we're getting into a whole lot of the subject here, but Ed Norton has. I'd have to go back and read his interview again. He did a Playboy interview with Frida, where he was. He essentially said that he either wrote it and received no credit, or that he had taken a strong hand with the directing and editing and received no credit. I forget which it is. It may be the writing.
I think it was a little bit of both.
Yeah,
actually.
He said essentially like. they don't credit me because that's because of the way the guild works and the way that the different unions work. But I you know, I had a really, really strong hand in shaping that film.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, which I think he has on several of his but I, you know, and so I'm sure she's a nice, talented woman. I mean, I liked Frida quite a lot, actually. And you know, Lion King seems to have found a great deal of success, but it just, you know. It just seems like it's one of those things that you can't turn down because, again, it's Spider-Man, it's U2, it's like $65 million. I mean, it's just – but all of the things that make it a gig you want to take are the things that make it a terrible gig, because the more money and the more big egos and power players on the line, the more you are effed every time – the more scrutiny there is and the more effed you are every time there's a mistake.
Well, also, I keep thinking about all of the crew members who are getting, you know, union wages to work on this show, the actors – who like are like, hooray, I'm cast in a Broadway show. And all of these people are committed to, like, they're just tied to this for as long as it runs,
right?
Because it's a job.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, you're not going to turn down a job. But at the same time, you know you're in a sinking ship and you're probably going to work every single day and just going, oh, dear God, what have I done?
Yeah, but the alternative is just to go back and, yeah, just to go back and be, you know, sit there in the actor's equity office just, like, trying to get a job as an extra somewhere. Because, I mean, that seems like an industry even more than film acting. It seems like, you know, some sort of a big-ticket Broadway gig. I mean, those are few and far between because it's not like there's a lot of, you know.
And the thing about that sort of thing is that if it is a huge, huge production like that and you have a smaller role in it, no one's going to hold it against you later if you've got that on your resume.
Right.
They know it's not your fault.
Right.
You know, but at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, I wish I was in a different show.
Well, that's, I mean,
I was in that Book of Mormon down the street.
I was just going to say, and that's the thing about Book of Mormon is like, it's like the little show that could, you know, because it's not that it hasn't gotten any attention paid to it, but I mean, it's, you know, but it's a pretty low budget affair, I think, compared to Spider-Man. If you look at it, I mean, there's a great production value, but it's not like it's a really costly show, I would imagine. And there's nobody in it who's a huge, huge star. You know, the biggest stars are Matt and Trey.
What theater is it?
Yeah. It's called the, the O'Neill Theater.
Oh, okay. And yeah, that's a medium sized theater.
Yeah, I would imagine. I couldn't see. I was on the floor, so I don't know if I don't know what's up in the. I was in the little lower mezzanine, so I don't know what's up in the balcony. But I would imagine, I don't know, 1,000 people, maybe. Yeah. It's certainly smaller than like the Schnitzer.
Yeah, they do a lot of I think they usually do musicals there.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it was. I mean, they're pretty savvy in that they're not opening it really, really huge, because I think they recognize it's a kind of a niche. I mean, it's a niche within a niche. I mean, it's incredibly profane and it's about Mormons and it's from the South Park guys. And so it's like, it's either going to be huge or it's just not going to draw very many people at all. I don't think there's any real middle ground there. All right. Well, speaking of all things entertaining and amusing, we mm-hmm. should take a moment to talk about Breaking Bad. Because you are now all the way through season 3. You are completely caught up with the rest of the world.
I am indeed.
Okay.
And dear Lord.
And here's the thing.
Was that a season ender?
And I said something and then I had to backtrack because you hadn't gotten there yet. And so I didn't want to spoil anything. But I said, John DeLancey, come on. And you're like, oh, no, he's not in this season. And I realized, oh, she's not there.
No, the thing is, I had seen him, but I had only seen him on one episode. The very first one when he first shows up.
Right.
And I didn't recognize him.
Right.
I didn't realize it was John DeLancey from that one episode. And you were going, really? I was going, Q's not in this. And then when it said they came back later previously on, and I said, oh my God, that was him. Oh, dear Lord.
But so we should say right now that we're going to talk about seasons 2 and 3 of Breaking Bad. So if you haven't seen them, or if you you know, you don't want to be spoiled or whatever, this is your fair warning. So there'll be some spoilers discussed for Breaking Bad, which starts its new season in, what, July or June or something?
July. Normally they do, it's apparently always debuted in March.
Right.
And they decided this year, there was an interview with Bryan Cranston, and he said that it was his understanding that AMC decided that if they moved it back to July, it wouldn't be competing with, like, anybody else, particularly with broadcast television.
Right.
So that they would just have, like, this big, wide-open audience for it in July.
Which is good. You know, it's just smart, because those guys are really on. I mean, if you think about Breaking Bad, Mad Men, Walking Dead, I mean, they're really, like, batting 1,000 over there. So, I mean, it's their, you know, they're doing something right. Anyway, so to the woman who actually posted on Facebook the other day, she said, I think it was like on Saturday, she said, fine, you win. I'm watching Justified starting today. You really also ought to be watching Breaking Bad if you're not. Breaking Bad is really, And when I say that it's Wire good, I mean it's like there are moments when it is every single bit as good as The Wire. There are moments in Breaking Bad that are as good as anything I've ever seen on television.
I, from everything I had heard about it and from watching the very first episode, I had really thought that it was going to be, I don't know, I think I thought it was going to be difficult to watch. I think I thought it was going to be, because I knew it was kind of grim.
It's a downer to some degree.
But the thing is, at the same time though, it, much like with something like Justified or The Wire or The Shield, you've got some really gritty subject matter.
Yeah.
But the characters are so complex and so multidimensional, and they know exactly when to lighten it with just enough sort of goofiness and something that's just so odd that it just pleases you. I can't say it makes you laugh. You don't spend a whole lot of time laughing at Breaking Bad, but there are
things... Well, they let the tension out of the balloon every now and again, or the air out of the balloon. They have a lot of grim, a lot of gallows humor at just the right moment.
The thing that fascinated me about watching it, because I did watch it pretty much, you know, straight through over a couple of months, is that it's really... It reminds me a lot of Mad Men in that it's really a lot, very unlike a lot of television in that the characters are growing and changing as it goes along. And most TV shows seem sort of invested in keeping the characters the same so that if you come in later, you know exactly who this person is.
He's the good guy. He's the bad guy. Right. She's the romantic interest.
Yeah. And here it's like Waltz started out kind of as the good guy. And he got into, selling, making meth as a way, at least he believed, and he still seems to believe, that he got into it to provide for his family. And then, of course, he finds out that his cancer's in remission and sort of loses it because he's, like, completely channeled his entire identity into being this new guy, which is based on the fact that he only has so much time left. And now it's like, hey, guess what? You're not going to die. And he's got to figure out what to do. Whereas Jesse starts out as kind of the dumbass junkie drug dealer, and other characters keep referring to him as such all the way up through season three, when in fact by season three it turns out you're in the situation where Walt is the one who is justifying his bad behavior and his criminal activities without any justification for doing so at all. He can rationalize everything he's doing. Whereas Jesse is going through this whole process of actually being in pain because he's starting to understand the consequences of what he's doing.
Right.
He's seeing the ripple effect of the damage, the toll that is taken on other people, and which makes him like an incredibly tragic character when he starts out just being a dumbass kid. And Walt is the one who is dying of cancer. And by the end of season three, Walt is kind of... He's kind of a little bit unsympathetic at this point.
Yeah, well, he's like Vic Mackey. I mean, he's a bad person. I mean, he's in many ways. I'm not saying he's an evil person, but he's a person who does many bad and evil things. We'll put it that way.
And he is someone that you would not have expected at the beginning of season three that he turns out to be someone who is capable of doing anything.
See, this is what I said to you when you started watching the series. I said the greatest thing about it is that there's episode like one, and then there's episode, 30 or whatever, at the end of season three. And by the time you get to episode 30, by the time you get to the end of the third season, you are like 1,000 miles away from where you started, but every step makes sense. I mean, every step is believable.
Yeah, Patrick got sucked into watching it because I'd been watching it without him. And then somewhere in the middle of season two, he caught an episode and then wanted to watch it along with me. And the last or the penultimate episode in season three, there's a scene where Walter is talking to Jesse, and he tells him that you're not a killer. And Patrick just kind of blurts out, it's like, and he's saying that because he is.
Right.
Walt is telling Jesse he can't kill it because he's not a killer. But the reason that Walt can say that is because Walt actually has become a cold-blooded killer.
Well, I mean, God damn. I mean, you want to talk about the stress-inducing episode, that episode where they're trapped in the room and there's the fly buzzing around. And, I mean, and Walter comes close a couple of times to revealing let the girlfriend die, that he de facto killed the girlfriend. And it's like...
I was sitting there, I don't talk out loud to the TV very often because I hate people who do that. And I'm sitting here watching that, and he came really close at one point, and I went, Walt, no, Walt, don't do it.
Well, and then they sort of just up the ante by not by not revealing it.
Yeah.
And so you know it's just sitting out there. It's just like this thing that's looming out there that will come out at the worst possible moment, probably, if it comes out. So just how great, though, was the way that they connected all the dots and wrapped up season two with the plane exploding, and
yeah.
then you suddenly realize why the wreckage and the whatever. And what could have seemed like sort of a cheat it's not, you know, the dead bodies aren't Walt, or it's not his house that burned down or whatever. You realize it's not, but you...
It's actually worse.
It's far worse.
Yeah.
It's like so... It wasn't like a fake out. I mean, it was, but it wasn't like a bait and switch. It was a bait and switch for something that was even worse.
Yeah.
And that they tied everything together without making it seem contrived. And I mean, so now you realize that Walt is, in a way, like directly responsible for the deaths of a handful of people and indirectly responsible for like... the deaths of dozens more, if you want to sort of look at it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, that there is, he's again like Vic Mackey, where however good his intentions, Peter Carlin said this thing about Vic Mackey one time, as opposed to Tony Soprano. He said that Tony Soprano was immoral but ethical, and that Vic Mackey was ethical, unethical but moral. In other words, the Vic Mackey was on the side of right, but he did terrible things. Tony Soprano was on the side of evil, but he had an honor code. So that it was the difference between being immoral and being dishonorable. And so Walter White may be on the side of right, theoretically, but he still does terrible, awful things to the point, like Vic Mackey, that he is fundamentally, I think, unredeemable.
Yeah.
That no matter what he does, there's no unringing the various bells that he is rung at this point. So, I mean, which I sort of like, actually.
Well, he's on his way to becoming Gustavo, basically.
Right.
He's turning into that guy. Which is a little bit frightening.
Speaking of season three and how that ends and what he's on his way, how great is Giancarlo Esposito, who I typically
don't... I love
don't,
Giancarlo Esposito.
And I don't care for him in a lot of things, but he's really, really good in Breaking Bad.
I've always loved him, and I've always wanted to see him have some roles as meaty as he did early in his career in the Spike Lee movies.
Right.
And he's never really... just had anything that was really that good until this.
Yeah.
And oh my God, that's a great character.
Yeah, he's awesome. And again, it could be like it could seem comical and unbelievable because he's this very, like, he's a collection of sort of tics where he's very type A and he's very, you know, very pinched off and closed and, you know, and efficient. And that could seem very, like, mincing and sort of cliched, but it's really believable. And it's very, has that, like, tight coiled spring thing going on. So.
And then the whole thing with Hank and his wife and their in this weird, interesting place, and she's like sort of, again, another character that, you know, was a certain way at the beginning of the series. She seemed flighty and neurotic, and she was a chronic shoplifter and had issues. And now it's like she's pulling out these reserves of strength
right.
that, you know, one does in a situation like that. But it's nice to see it. Again, a TV show that opts to have characters be complex and multidimensional and grow and change as the show continues on.
So I hope that they have an endpoint in mind and that they stick with it, that they don't get lulled into just extending it beyond its lifespan, because that would be a tragedy.
I won't go into this because it's really not worth going into, but I watched this entire season of Big Love because I knew they were closing out the show, and they had the season of finale this past weekend.
All right, where all is sort of,
and
you know,
dear God, it was a mess.
Yeah.
It just, even though they had an entire season to close it out and they knew going in that they were ending it, every, you know, it's like there's so many loose ends that didn't get wrapped up, characters that we don't know what happened to them, and it felt like they just made it up as they went along, and it was one of, I'm getting spoiled now for good like show finales and season finales now from some of these shows we're watching, and you see something like Big Love and it's such just such a mess.
It's
such a disappointment.
And that's the thing. That's why I had to. I think that's why I bailed out on. And I know it's a dumb example, but that's why I bailed out on True Blood. Not that I expect True Blood to be like Breaking Bad. They're different kinds of shows. But just because something is pulpy and fun and, you know, and frothy entertainment doesn't mean it has to be badly done.
Yeah.
There is such a thing as badly done fun, or, you know, or well done. Well, there's such a thing as well done dumb fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can do something that is sort of, that is ridiculous and absurdist and, or even kitschy or camp or, you know, or that doesn't have any pretense of being anything beyond entertainment and do it in a quality way, as opposed to just sloppy writing, which is what True Blood became and which is what Big Love for me became, like, you know, years ago.
Well, it's very weird, though, seeing the that last episode, though, of Big Love, where just to give them a chance to be on the show one more time, brought back at the very end of the show a scene with Amanda Seyfried, who was the daughter, Teeny, and the guy she ran off with and had a baby with, who's Jesse on Breaking Bad.
Oh, that's weird. I never even put that together.
No, I hadn't either.
Okay, then.
I kept going, wow, he looks familiar. I wonder where I know him from.
So the question on Breaking Bad now is I have no idea where it goes. If you ask me, like, how it ends, I remember when we led up to when we were getting close to the end of The Shield, there was a lot of discussion because they did a great, great job. Sean Ryan did a great job of keeping the end of The Shield secret, and no one... He didn't screen it for anybody until the last possible moment. It wasn't online. You couldn't find spoilers. Nobody knew how it was going to end. And there was a lot of discussion about, is Vic Mackey going to go to prison? Is he going to be dead? Is he going to end up, you know, is somebody else going to be dead? You know, what? There was a lot of debate about that. And
the last thing you expected was him to just be confined to a cubicle.
Seriously. I mean, it was just like, in some ways, the worst ending for him, but the best ending for the show. But I always really admired the fact that I couldn't predict it. I had no idea. I wasn't sure. And I really am not sure what's going to happen to Walter White either. I just have no... I don't think I could draw a list of the five most likely endings for him and have any idea which is the most likely. So I'm glad you're caught up. It really is a great show.
It is amazing.
And I wondered before I watched the show, you know, like, because he's won the Best Actor Emmy for, like, you know, 3 years or 4 years in a row, or so, I guess 3 years. And I wondered, you know, not that he didn't deserve it, but I thought, well, what is all the fuss about? And then I watched the show and I thought, well, my God, of course. I mean, they should just give him the thing for the rest of the decade.
And even watching, like, all three seasons of it, because he's very good in it. And it's just a brilliantly written show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I wasn't entirely sold on him, you know, winning all of those Emmys until that episode with the two of them in The Fly.
Yeah.
Is that he has so much just great, meaty stuff.
Well, that's
that
one of those
episode.
Roles that, you know, actors just would kill for, because he just gets to really act. I mean, he really gets just to get down in it. So, yeah, I'm a huge, and I like the woman who plays Skyler, his wife. I was, as you said earlier, that's a character that they didn't originally, it didn't seem like they were going to do a lot with her. But everybody in that show is sort of like, everybody in that show is this sort of, sounds so gay, but everybody in the show is sort of like this flower that seems like one thing, and then it just sort of, it just sort of blooms and blossoms into something entirely different.
And also tying all of the TV universes together. She's another actress. I was trying to figure out where I knew her from. She played Martha Bullock, Timothy Oliphant's wife on Deadwood.
See, this is, you know, I have to go back and watch that again. Deadwood's a show that I have to go back and watch, because I've got it and I just haven't watched it again since it went off. So, we should segue from then Breaking Bad to last night's episode of House, which we didn't get a chance to talk about last week's episode. But we had last week's episode, was the one that ended. I just remember it's the one that ended with him jumping off the hotel into the swimming pool.
Oh yeah, that, yeah.
And I have to say this about last night. I got to the point last night where he was getting married. He was there stepping up and getting, and Wilson was saying the thing about, Chase was saying the thing about, and now, blah, 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 they're going to get married. And I paused it for some reason, and then I didn't go back, and I completely forgot to finish it. So I didn't even know how much was left. It was like 5 minutes or something.
Yeah.
So what happened? He's standing there getting ready to get married,
God.
And what happened? Was it awful?
Oh, my God. I'm so disappointed you didn't see the end, because the thing that's most worth discussing came at the very, very end.
How much time are we talking about there?
The very, very end.
But I mean, from that point.
Yeah, you probably had 5 or 10 minutes. There really wasn't that much left.
All right, I was going to ask if it's probably not watchable during a break, unfortunately.
Well, here's the thing. I can sum it up. Okay, because you saw the whole thing. Homeless guy,
right.
Guy at the park, not giving him his real name. He might be this guy. He might be that guy. He might spin something else. He was the boyfriend on Joan of Arcadia.
Okay.
Which is kind of interesting to see him and Amber Tamblyn working opposite each other again. She is sympathetic to him, as you saw, where everyone else is like, he's just a homeless guy. There was that whole thing, you saw the scene where they found all the weird crap in his guts because
he was eating chicken bones or something to get food.
Right, yeah. So, very end of it, they figure out who he is because he's... The name of the guy in the books that he had was this guy in rehab, so they go looking for him.
Yeah, I got to that point.
Well, And then did you get
He doesn't want to get to the dad. He doesn't want to see the dad again because he'll kill him and whatever.
Now, did you see the part where they went to the dad's house?
Yeah. And the dad, the kid's dead. And, you know, so he stole somebody's identity.
Okay, so here's the thing. At the very end of the show, of course, you know, he has a nice little moment with Amber Tamblyn, and he says he's, you know, figured out something, and he's here for a purpose.
Right.
And God wants him something, and she helped him, and that's awesome. And she says, well, you know, thanks. I'll see you later, Danny. He says, my name's not really Danny. She goes, that's okay. It doesn't matter. And she walks out. Then, of course, next morning, he's gone. He didn't stick around. He left. And then at the very last minute, at the end of the show, they discover he's actually a serial killer who's been traveling around the country killing people and eating them.
Oh, my God. You're kidding.
No. The end.
Okay. I didn't expect you to say that just now.
And so the thing is, if they don't bring this character back later and do more with this, that is the worst, stupidest ending for a TV show I've ever seen.
Do they play it like a sort of like a goof? Like, in other words, do they play it as like a dark humor? Like, uh-oh, wah, wah.
No, it was just awkward and stupid.
Okay, hold on a second. I've actually got the audio here.
And then there's some scene where they're talking about it and he was a monster. And we healed him so he could go back out into the world.
Okay, let me just... I think I've actually got this. God. All right. So it's time for everybody's favorite segment, Watch a TV Show with Rick. let's see here. Okay, well, see, the good news is it's only like... I think it's like 90 seconds or something from the end. Hold on a second. Let me just... All right, hold on.
Promised I wouldn't let this get to me. It got to me.
Just say the word, and we will climb out that window right now.
All right, so this is Wilson talking to Cuddy. Let me just skip forward. All right.
Surprise, surprise, house is a dick.
All right. So this is, she's walking off. She's leaving, what's his name, homeless guy? Or is he behind? Yeah, literally there's 90 seconds left here, so. Wait, so did House actually go through with the wedding?
Yeah. Yeah, he went through with the wedding, and then...
Okay, so they're watching. House is sitting on the couch with his new bride.
I know this is not the real marriage, but I really like you.
Have they...
I like you, too.
Oh, God.
Oh, no, it's just...
Wait, so did I have to ask? Because I skipped by a couple other minutes, but... are we to believe that the thing he gave, that the reason he gave for getting married about, like, he basically just wants, like, a live-in cook or something, like, that, as far as we know, is the actual reason?
Yes.
That he's marrying
this? Yeah, well, watch that. You've got, like, 20 seconds here left.
I've got a minute 15 left in the episode here, so.
Yeah. And then she, like, smooches on him or something.
Well, this is going to be a fast wrap because I guess there's literally 1 minute left.
Yeah. Oh, I heard the smooching.
I can't.
Why not?
I never sleep with married women. I'm going to bed. You can take the couch.
Because now I'm going to be a giant dick to you too. Because that's what I do.
You know, for no readily apparent reason. All right, we have 45 seconds left here. Okay. Let's see how quickly they could tie all this together. So here comes Amber Tamblyn.
What's going on?
Danny disappeared without checking out.
And they're the
FBI
in there.
Colin that just showed up.
Of all of the shows that I just decided, like, I don't even, but it is symptomatic of House this season, so to speak, that I got to within like 2 minutes, I'm like, I got to go take out the trash, and then I just forgot to hit play again.
And then before, just want to say, for anybody who hasn't seen this episode, who doesn't watch House, who isn't, what he's saying to it, this is literally the very, very end of the show. And just how this actually even like made it into the final script and anyone decided this was a good way to end an episode of a TV show.
There are literally 27 seconds left in the episode.
Danny's DNA. When we sent it to the lab for testing, it sent off alarm bells all over the country.
Alarm bells for what?
He's linked to 13 unsolved murders in 10 different states. A serial killer who eats his victims.
And we saved him.
Wow, the end.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I'm just saying, if they don't actually ever bring this character back.
If they just sort of pretend that never happened.
If we never reference him again, if this never happens, that is like the stupidest thing I've ever seen on television.
Well, I mean, I know that we've been talking about how badly House has been going downhill and everything, but they would have to realize they can't just never mention that again. I mean, even by their standards, that would be ridiculous. Oh, my God. I got up literally, I think, to take the trash out. And then I was like, was I doing something? I guess not. I'll go to bed. And I forgot to finish the show.
I can't wait to talk to Rick about this because it's just so ridiculous.
This was almost better in a strange way. Good God almighty. But is this, and I do see now in a perverse way, probably not the way they intended, I really am looking forward to next Monday only because I want to know if this is a thing that they, another one of those deals where something happens and they pretend it last week never happened.
I'll bet you they don't mention it at all.
Or if they do, they'll mention it like, you know, at the end of the series when they wrap everything up and like Amber Tandler will see in the news that he's been taken down by the cops somewhere.
Or she'll go home one night and he's sitting on her porch.
Yeah. And they'll just, you know, it'll just be one of those like little bone that they throw us at the end of the entire series when it's done. Wow. That's really not what I expected there.
Yeah.
Boy, that's dumb.
Yeah. No, it's deeply, deeply dumb.
Okay. Well, really, the only thing I can say for that is...
It's crazy, because, first of all, why would you buy parts from in Japan when you're supposed to keep it in the United States anyway? That's how, I mean, it's a common sense. I hope they're up there saying, a duh, because that was just stupid.
There you go. Yep. Anybody who didn't hear Legion of News today, you missed a whole lot of humor. Somebody else was, by the way, in terms of... we were talking about that soundbite and what it sounded like. Somebody was saying that it sounded like they're spraying the babies woman. Somebody else weighed in that... That woman here.
It's crazy because, first of all, why would you buy parts from in Japan when you're supposed to keep it in the United States anyway?
Somebody noted that it sounded maybe a little bit in terms of the clarity of delivery. Like
I would obviously move from the area of the feces and make sure I tell the correct authorities about the situation.
This woman really is in a class by herself, though.
First of all, why would you buy parts from in Japan when you're supposed to keep it in the United States anyway? That's how, I mean, it's a common sense. I hope they're up there saying, a duh. Bobby was like, stop.
All right, excellent.
Yeah, for those who have missed Legion of News, that was from a story about General Motors suspending production because in a plant in Louisiana because they couldn't get parts. And this is an employee at the GM plant saying that she is all irritated because, you know, them damn people with their tragedy in Japan
So you're much better than I am. I just I don't bother to explain it. I was just figure if you didn't listen. You miss out on humor. Oh, by the way, somebody, Aaron in the OC, I'm sorry, Jesus in the OC has noted that the next House isn't going to be on for 3 weeks. So you got to wait 3 weeks. He said, by the way, the next episode is the return of 13, though.
Oh.
So there's that. Because I never watched that coming next week or whatever on the next House. So, well, there you go. All right.
Yeah. Well, and so you watched Shameless, did you?
I did. I should actually say this. I should say that I watched the first episode of Shameless. I have not watched subsequent episodes. I was going to watch more on the plane, but I didn't.
I'm slightly less enamored with it now that I'm 5 or 6 episodes into it.
I'm really not enamored of it at all based on the first episode. I mean, I'm not saying it's a terrible show. I just don't... I don't know. It doesn't... I don't think I'm seeing... Whatever you saw in it.
It might have been it just hit me at a certain time because I really, really loved that first episode. And I'm enjoying the series, but it's not, you know, it's not up there. Because, like, I'm back. Now that I've finished all of Breaking Bad, I'm back watching The Wire.
Yeah.
So now I think I'm on episode 6 of season 2 of The Wire. So
yeah,
you know, and you watch like Breaking Bad, you watch Justified, you watch The Wire, and then you watch something like Shameless, which is very good, but at the same time, it's also rather episodic.
Yeah.
I've noticed it's like the characters aren't really there doesn't seem to be much of an ongoing story arc. The characters aren't growing and changing in any way.
It shouldn't be an hour long, first of all.
And
that should be a half an hour
and it's
show.
It's too long.
That's by the time we get to the half hour point, I thought, well, this would be a good place to stop, and then we had another like half of the episode to go.
Yeah.
It feels very much like it would function better as a 29-minute show.
The best character in the whole show, as far as I'm concerned, is Joan Cusack, who plays
she's fascinating.
And then she gets involved with Frank, ends up in a relationship with Frank, and and then she's agoraphobic and has to keep coming to terms with her agoraphobia.
It seems like a show that if I had seen it, if it was on like 7 or 8 years ago, maybe, especially if it was on a network, you might go like, wow, what an amazing, mind-blowing, groundbreaking show this is. But I think in the context, again, of what I've seen since then and what is on now, I just don't know that it stands out. And I don't think the writing is sharp enough to make it stand out.
I also should know better at this point to say I love or I hate something based entirely on having seen just one episode as well. So
it was. I mean, it's okay. I mean, it's a competently done show. It's well done. But I just don't. I don't know that it's. It doesn't strike me as. I don't know. I'll watch a few more before I make up my mind.
On the other hand, week by week, my love for the animated show Bob's Burgers grows.
That's on my list of things I got to watch.
So that's from Lauren Bouchard, who did Dr. Katz and Home Movies, and H. John Benjamin, who was a voice actor on Dr. Katz. He's like, honestly, one of the best voice actors working in the business right now. He's hilarious. And I feel like Kristen Schaal does a voice. And it is insanely funny. It's really, really good.
Several people have recommended that, so I got to watch that. So, well, at this, we should probably just bring the curtain down on everything. We got an installment of Greatest Songs Ever Made, but we'll do that tomorrow. So tomorrow, Greatest Songs Ever Made. Also, Mr. Joe Squires in the studio. I said we had a guest announcement. So I will make that today. We'll talk more about this tomorrow. Joining us in studio this coming Friday, Don mm-hmm. Taylor, who might be joining us in studio this coming Friday. What performance duo?
Fallen Storm?
Yes.
Yay!
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Well, and we had talked about this. I had approached you and I said, you know, they're going to be in town. I was thinking about trying to get them for Ham-Fisted Radio, unless you're going to try and get them for Usher, because I don't want to, you know, compete.
Dawn forgetting where her loyalties lie.
No, I said, I know where my loyalties lie. That's why I talked to you about it first before I even sent any kind of a query. And then you said, oh, we're thinking about trying to get it. So
that's not what I said. I said it was on my list of things to do.
Right, which meant it might not happen. Yeah. So then I was just kind of going, maybe I should do it anyway because he said it's on his list of things to do, which means he won't do it. So, and then neither of us will get to talk
to him. It's telling that you didn't actually say, well, before I contact them to be on the Rick Emerson show, Rick, maybe you'd like to do it. It wasn't that you were going to contact them, you know.
No, that was precisely it. I was saying, I asked you if you were thinking about getting them for the Rick Emerson show. And if you were, I would not approach them for my little side project over here because this has priority. You have priority, and I don't want to step on your toes.
All right. Well, in any event. But for those who are not familiar, and I always feel like there's a little asterisk you got to do when you say Paul and Storm because people automatically think of Storm Large. So people who are Colton fans, if you're a Jonathan Colton fan, you know Paul and Storm. If you've seen him tour, if you've seen Colton in concert, the odds are like 98% that you saw Paul and Storm because they are frequently his opening act. And when I say they're his opening act, sometimes that's used as like a diminishing statement. But really, they're brilliant. And they also come out and they do his backing vocals and his harmonies and they're multi-instrumentalists and they're brilliant. And they were Paul and Storm, who were two guys that were in Da Vinci's Notebook, who are the folks behind the Take a Look at My Enormous Penis, the Penis Watch theme. So for those who have not seen Paul and Storm.
And if you don't know them, you should go to their website and listen to their music. Because they are Rick's telling the truth. They are brilliant.
They're freaking amazing. I mean, they're unbelievable. I will actually tell you, and we'll talk more about this later on. But I just wanted to say because we got the many nerds in the house. So this Friday, Paul and Storm are going to be in the studio right here. Right here, Paul and Storm.
This chair is getting some serious assage.
Seriously.
That whoever gave it to Goodwill would never have even imagined.
And by the way, just here's how easily we can fool people. So Cheryl confirmed this morning they were going to be on, and she actually meant she said, they're really looking forward to it. So they're fools. So that is going to be this coming Friday. Paul and Storm are going to be in the studio. But I will say that my first experience with those guys was, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago. I think it's when we went to see Colton with you and Patrick. I think Lauren and I went with you.
Yeah.
And I had sort of heard of them, but that was before I knew that they were. That was where I knew that they had been the guys in Da Vinci's Notebook, and there's that, you know, because I've mentioned many times the whole thing that I had them in the studio, and it never occurred to me to have them sing the penis song because I didn't know they were the Da Vinci's Notebook guys. Whatever, blah blah blah. So you fast forward to that night when I go to see Colton, and they, you know, and it's like, ladies and gentlemen, your opening act, Paul and Storm, and it's like, you know, how many times, you know, you just go, you know, the opening, you know, the act matters. It's like, you know, and it's like the Schmuck Sisters, and you're just going like, well, I just, you know, I'm gonna go to the beer garden or whatever, and then they came out and they were freaking amazing. I mean, they were just mind-blowingly funny talented and hilarious.
They start their act with this song called We're the Opening Band, which is just hilarious.
Which we will be ending today's show with.
And you did that thing that people do. You were sitting there and I was sitting right next to you, and you're sitting there and you're kind of slumped back. We were sitting back towards the back of the Aladdin, and I didn't want to sit with my friends because they wanted to sit up front with all of the crazy Jonathan Coulton fans. So we were sitting in the back, and you were kind of slumped back in your chair, and you had a cup of coffee, and you're drinking the coffee. You had that whole body language of like, okay, I'm going to watch the opening, guys, before Jonathan Coulton comes. And then they started playing, and you sat up a little bit straighter. And then by the time they were done with that first song, you were actually leaning forward and just riveted on them.
They were really, I mean, it was, I don't know what I expected them to do or to be. I don't think I could remember that now, but it was not, I don't think I was expecting anything. And I'm not overselling when I say that they are just, they're freaking brilliant. And when I say brilliant, I mean, they're hilarious and they're funny, but they're also, I mean, it's that thing of when you see somebody performing or you hear somebody performing and you can tell that they are like whip smart in addition to being hilarious and talented, you know, musically in this case. And just.
And you know who they're in town with on the 25th, don't you? Will Wheaton.
Really?
Apparently, I believe Will Wheaton's.
Do they all just travel around like on a tandem bicycle
they
or something
do.
Together?
They all,
and then they go back to bunk beds?
And then they go hang out at Neil Gaiman's house and with John Hodgman and the guys from Mythbusters, and they all have this little cabal of cool friendship that none of us will ever be part of.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. Thanks for ending things on a big note there.
But they'll be here, and they're looking forward to it.
They really are they are astoundingly good. So Paul and Storm are going to be in the studio this Friday.
And we will be so tired. And so, because we got the other stuff going on those 2 days, too. So.
No, it's going to be not next week.
Oh, is it?
It's going to be next week.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Really?
Next week.
Okay.
I'm assuming that won't be a problem.
Okay. We'll talk off the air.
Everybody knows what we're talking about, by the way, or they could, because there's apparently a press release that went out.
Oh,
about
okay.
It. So the deal is that, you know, Bob Miller, who of course is the host over at the now late morning host over at KPAM. So Bob Miller's going to be out of town, and so the folks at KPAM, having a keen ear for talent, asked if we do a little fill in for Bob Miller, and it was originally going to be late this week, and so now I just received, actually just today, got a thing saying that they want to move that to next week.
Yeah,
you gonna be gone?
No, I moved something really, really super important from Friday to the following Thursday because of this.
How are you feeling about that choice?
I'm feeling great.
Well, you can. I don't think next Thursday is one of the days.
Oh, okay.
I think it's like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Oh, okay, then that's fine.
But then maybe I'm just saying that to make you feel better.
Okay.
I thought you were going to be on your period or something, and then it was just going to be a whole.
No, okay. No. Patrick's got. They're going to be poking Patrick with
this
a
more
scope
like,
again.
This more, I'm about to. You know, I almost died stuff from him.
Yeah, kind of. They want to make sure he's not still dying, and so he has to go to OHSU, and they're going to stick scopes down in and look inside his liver or something.
Whatever. We'll figure it out. There was a press release or something going out about it because I saw a thing on Twitter. I logged on to Twitter and a guy had posted something. He said, "What's all this about KPAM now?" He said, sounding you know like J.R. Pennypacker. Uh-huh. And I said, "Oh, we're gonna be whoring our program and also filling in or whatever." So that's gonna be a few days next week over at KPAM. So we'll have more details on that. But this Friday,
all
Paul
our listeners
and Storm,
are going, "What? They're giving it away for free?"
Yeah, but we're gonna try to suck over there. So you know, what are you gonna do? We won't have to try that hard, probably. So that's gonna be next week.
Well, because you know, you and I, we'll fit right in at KPAM.
Yes. No, Victoria Taft is probably she's probably wearing her I Heart Rick Emerson shirt right now.
Because, I mean, you know, you, me, Bob Miller, I'm sure his audience won't even notice the difference.
No, not at all. So that'll be, because it's like the thing is like every day, too, I just, you know, probably not a day goes by when I don't log into Facebook or email or something. And it's always the same thing. I get an email from some guy. And he's like, "Hey, best show ever, longtime listener. So are you ever going to be doing any kind of broadcast ever again where I could hear you?" And I'll email him back like, "Dear guy, thanks for being a longtime listener. For like a year now, we've been doing the show that's available on any computer, which you clearly own because you're Facebooking me, you know, or like, you know, or on your iPhone."
Had it occurred to you to perhaps go to rickemerson.com first to see if there was anything
going
on?
That's the thing.
On.
It's like, and I'm not trying to be a jerk, but as a Facebook, especially the messages on Facebook, where like 100 times a week we post a thing like, "Today's show starts in 2 minutes." Whoa. And so if you're on Facebook sending me a message asking if we're ever going to do a broadcast, What are you doing on Facebook that you almost have to actively avoid the messages saying, like, our show starts in an hour?
Now, to be fair, they did start doing this weird thing on Facebook a few weeks back where unless you're aware of it, this was like a month or two back, unless you're aware of it, you're only seeing messages from, like, a limited number of people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the people that you get the most traffic from or something like that. And you have to – it was another one of those Facebook things where somebody has to clue you into the fact that you have to dig down into your preferences somewhere to say, yes, please show me messages from everyone
right.
I have friended.
Well, that's great.
So, yeah. So, because I went through a whole thing – for like a month or two where I was going, wow, it seems like some of the people I know just aren't on Facebook anymore.
It's like they're just trying to make it difficult to use that thing sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, in any event, so I take a little bit of that back because it seems like I was just getting these messages from people who were, they were just so completely, I mean, it's not like everybody's life has to revolve around me and the show and whatever, but they just had no clue that
sure
we were doing
does.
A show. And well, it does, but I don't like to say
yeah.
it. And so I would email like, dear guy, you know, we've been doing this online show for like a year and you ought to listen to it and whatever. And then they would always say, oh, well, I hadn't heard anything about it. And so so now this is our chance to sort of pound it into the ear holes of the assembled man. And also just to irritate everybody else. So that's going to be one of the win column either way.
Okay.
So that'll be a few days next week. So we'll have more details on that. But this Friday, Paul and Storm are going to be in the studio. We'll end the show with a little song from Paul and Storm here in just a second. Let's see. Also tomorrow, join us when our guests will include Mr. Joe Squires of Squires Electric. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. After a brief interlude, we'll have an encore of the day's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all, so thank you for listening, and please spread the word, especially to, you know, that guy. It is Tuesday, March 22nd, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.
Hours in traffic on the highway for 50 bucks and half price on the cheese fries and free Miller Lite on tap. Who can drink that crap? My cousin lives in town and will be crashing at his place unless his girlfriend's home from college and she's staying for the weekend. And if she is, then we will have to go and park the van behind the IHOP by the turnpike, and we'll sleep in the back seat. And we're wondering just where the headline act is. They're probably getting wasted in the green room, and they don't give a rat's ass who we are. So when they start to play up here, we're gonna drink all their beer. We are the opening band. We hope that all of you sign up on our mailing list and buy our disc and t-shirts in black and gray. We are the opening band, and we only got about 25 more minutes left. That's all we get to blow your ass away. We are the opening band. We
opening band.